Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, world. Welcome once again to Tuesday Talk with Key West Lou. I am your host, Louis Patron. What a week. Even today, yesterday, things are happening, things I want to talk about. And I also want to talk tonight about things that no one's talking about, and I believe we should be talking about. So without further ado, let's get right to the show tonight. The first thing I want to talk about is the length of presidential campaigns and costs. Okay, our campaigns are too long. We're 14 months from Election Day, and what are we doing? We've had 3-4 months now of solid politics, day after day after day. We're not even close to the Iowa primary yet. The first in the nation are their caucus, whatever they do. This is wrong. I'm sick of Donald Trump. I'm sick of Hillary Clinton. I'm sick of all these candidates. I wish I'm not hearing what we should hear. You're not hearing what you should hear. I'm sick of hearing Trump saying, this guy's stupid. He doesn't know what he's talking about. He came to me for money. I want to know what they think they're going to do, these candidates, if they are elected president. We live in bad times. And I'm sick of hearing Hillary saying, well, gee, you know, with the email, I should have done it the other way. She should have done it the other way, probably. And this bothers me about Hillary. Because she should know better. She's probably the smartest person to ever be available for the presidency. But at the same time, I'm sick and tired of hearing about her emails. All right, let's talk first about Lent. They're too long. We know it. We're all sick about them. And here's what I suggest, okay, for primaries and elections. You know, I don't know if you're going to like this. I think by law we should have a specified period for the election campaign, for the presidency, and a specified period for the primary. I am suggesting 2 months for the campaign for the presidency. Only 2 months the candidates run. And for the primaries, they give them 3 months because you got a ton of people and they have to cover more ground. Well, you say, oh my God, how can they do that? Look what's happening now. There doesn't seem to be enough time. They have to be on the air all the time. This is the age of modern efficiency. I mean, there was a time a presidential candidate never left home. Abe Lincoln never left his front porch or his office. You know, people talked for him all over the country, but presidential candidates didn't go around the country. It wasn't possible. Then there came the railroad, and presidential candidates went on the back of a train, and they stopped in every community, and they campaigned from there. We have television today. We have the internet. We have Facebook, Twitter, and everything else. Why do we have to have our candidates running all over the country, making speeches in different states, et cetera, et cetera? Let them use the modern efficiencies that we have today. Use television, use the internet, and so forth. And then you can have your campaigns in that short a period of time. And it's not unfair because everyone's got the same time frame, so it is fair to everyone. When it comes to money, okay, money, all right, no more money from outside sources. No big money from the rich and the powerful. No money from the dollar, $5 from poor people. From now on, government finance campaigns, okay? And the government, they're going to decide, we're going to give you X number of dollars apiece. That's it, Charlie. You can't put your own money in. You can't put anyone else's money in. Use your money wisely. This balances the playing field. And, you say, well, how can you do that for elections? We're already doing it, my friends. Do you know that Congress passed a law and some president signed it years ago that the Republican and Democratic conventions that nominate the president of the United States, did you know, those parties are totally paid for by your tax dollars. The government pays for both conventions, 100 cents on the dollar. I can't remember how many millions of dollars it comes to every year. Isn't that fantastic? So why we can do it. It can be done. And these campaigns will be a hell of a lot cheaper than they are now. So that's what I suggest. I wish people start talking about this. The politicians won't go for it probably, but there has to be a starting point. Someone has to start talking about it. I am tonight, and I hope along the way over the next few years other people pick up on this. Moving on, this Kim Davis, the Kentucky clerk who didn't want to marry same-sex couples and has gone to jail. A federal judge held her in contempt because she refused to perform her duties under the law. If you watch TV today, I can't believe it. The judge let her out today because he says five of your deputies are doing it, and you can't stop them. Now, if you go back and stop them, then you're really going to be in trouble. And watch her on TV. It was, with all due respect, it was the second coming of Jesus Christ today. She came out of that jail with Mike Huckabee and her lawyer from wherever group he is. She's got her arms up in the air, and she's looking to the heavens, and she's crying. Mike Huckabee's crying. I can't believe this. They're making, what's the term I'm looking for? They're doing something with this woman. They're making her into something she is not. She's getting her 15 minutes, and I think that's all she's going to get, but she's being used and abused in the meantime. It's just not right. And let me say this, too. The judge can put a person in jail for contempt. You violate a court order or a law. Judge doesn't have to screw around and say we're going to have a hearing for this or that. He brings you in the court. He has a hearing. She had her opportunity. She testified. The lawyers did their thing. And the judge says you're wrong. Either you do it right or you go to jail until you decide to do it right. It's been that way forever in this country. And you can go to jail for 18 months or 24 months, depending on the state, till you tell the judge, I'll do what you want, Your Honor. Because we must all abide and conform with the law. She doesn't want to follow the law. Now, she says she's got a religious ground not to follow. She doesn't believe in this. She found Christ. I'm mocking her now, but she may have. The fact that she was divorced three times, she's into her fourth marriage, is immaterial. She has found Christ. Good. But I don't have to find her Christ, nor do these people going in there for licenses have to find her Christ, nor do you have to find her Christ. We all determine who our Christ is and how we abide by his decisions. But if she does not want to do what the law says she must do, this is merely a ministerial act. Her job says she must give out marriage licenses. It doesn't say you only give out marriage licenses to men and women. That is not what the law of the United States is anymore, from high up the Supreme Court. If she doesn't want to do that, quit your job. That's all. Go get another job. Of course, she's making $80,000 a year, which is a good buck in today's society. She's an elected official. But if she can't perform her duty, then she should quit. And if she doesn't want to quit and doesn't perform it, then the judge should throw her back in jail again. Very simple. Absolutely simple. We just can't live like this. Now, again, she's had her 15 minutes. She's on a religious high, those hands up in the air. And I'm going to tell you this. I've always had a degree of respect for Mike Huckabee. He was governor of some southwestern state once in the early times when he ran for president. I thought he did a commendable job. Even today, I've always thought the man seems to know what he's talking about. He's a religious fanatic after watching him on television today. This guy's nuts. And he's out there goosing this woman and making a star out of her. And no good's going to come of this. And there is no freedom of religion in this situation. You know, we all have to follow laws. They have a law. You can only go 60 miles an hour. You can't drive your car 120 miles an hour. You're going to go to jail. It's very simple. And I remember this. I got to share this with you. I'm Catholic. I was brought up. I went to Catholic grammar school, high school, and college. We were taught in grammar school and into high school that the Jews would never see the face of God because they rejected him. They turned their backs on him. They had him crucified. And do you want to know something? Lewis and everyone else in my class for several years, until we got out of school, we believed this, that a Jew would never, that there's some place for them, but they'd never get to heaven and see the face of God. Now, what a crock that is, all right? And does that mean that I have a freedom of religion if I thought that way, though? That because the Jews denied Christ, they would not see heaven. And because of that reason, I don't like Jews, because this is what they were fomenting in us as kids. And so I don't have to do business with a Jew. I don't have to sell them groceries. I don't have to have them come into my pharmacy. I don't have to provide them with legal services. You're on your own. You rejected my God. Okay? It just doesn't make sense to me. And the baker who doesn't want to bake the cake for the gay couple for a wedding, he has no right to do that if he's got a store that's selling cakes and everything else to the public. We're crazy in this country, and we've gotten religiously crazy, and this is going to kill us, not help us. Moving on. What I'm going to tell you now is shocking. A book just came out, and the book's title is $2 a Day, Living on Almost Nothing in America. $2 a Day, Living on Almost Nothing in America, by Catherine Eden and H. Luke Schaefer. There are 1.5 million households in the United States, 1.5 million households, where the people in that house each live on $2 a day. $2 a day per person. Not a hell of a lot of money, okay? And I don't know how you live on $2 a day per person. I don't know how you make it on $2 a day. Now, these people also, so you get the whole picture, they're not receiving any benefits. They're not on welfare. They're not on unemployment. They don't have anything free. None of the benefits that are available out there, the 1.5 million people. They have no job, obviously. And they're hanging on virtually with no income. Now, these are working families that slid into poverty. Okay? Why did this happen? Why, you know, we had the big middle class, now we don't have it. Because there's a failure of the labor market. We got screwed up. The jobs went over to Europe and to Asia and to Mexico. The new jobs don't pay anywhere near as much. And it's just tough. You can't educate your kid and so forth. There's no safety net. And I've got to blame Obama to a degree for this. There used to be a safety net. If you were out of a job, you could depend on unemployment almost forever and all this type of stuff. Slowly but surely, the safety nets have been pulled back under the Obama administration. And I don't think it's right. Now, the number of people not working and not receiving benefits has increased substantially over the years and quite rapidly since Obama took office. All right? As a result, this is what people who are doing to get a couple of dollars extra every day. They're donating blood, donating plasma. Don't laugh. I can remember back in the 50s when I was in college. Whenever we were broke, we went and sold a pint of blood. We went. There was a place. It was $5 or $10 we got for a pint of blood. We were strong young men, and we needed money. We didn't have any cash flow. We'd go sell a pint of blood. They're going through garbage pails, your garbage pails, my garbage pails, and they're picking out aluminum cans and selling it. And in some cases, and this is very sad, we're finding out that they're entering the sex trade. All right? Not right, not right, not right. Now, let me stay with poverty for a moment. Were you aware that food stamps are on the rise? The food stamp program has gotten larger. In 2008, there were just under 30 million people on food stamps. 2008, Obama became president, 2008, 2009, about 5, 8, around there. He was president. That's when he became president, I think. Within a year or two, 30 million people on food stamps. Today, there are 46.5 million people. 16.5 million more people today on food stamps than when Obama took office. Okay? Don't tell me there's no 1%, 99%. This proves it. Where you've got people making millions of dollars a year, heads of banks, insurance companies, corporations, they're making that kind of money. And you've got other people making big money too, six-figure money. You've got 99% of your population, actually 90%, who don't have any money. They're living hand to mouth. They're living several people to an apartment. I see it here in Key West. It's deplorable. And it's because of we've got inequality in pay, absolutely no question. And what's funny, too, is over the last several years, as the rich have gotten richer, The poor have gotten poor, and one of the reasons the poor have gotten poor is because the poor never got any raises, and yet the cost of goods they have to buy to survive have gone up. Obama failure. I love Obama, but he screwed up along the way, too. He's no different than anyone else. Now, let's get to these immigrants running all over the place in Europe. This is bad stuff, very bad stuff. And this is going to be, this is a perfect example of why it's bad. The United Nations, and we're only going to talk about a small number of refugees for a moment that the United Nations has been helping. There are Syrian refugees in Jordan. 229,000 Syrian refugees in Jordan. The United Nations sent a text message out to these people. They're living in Jordan. They're living in Jordan. They're home to Jordan now. And said, okay, they said this last year. In 1 year, we're going to run out of money, and we won't be able to send you any more money to help you buy food. The day has come. It's either October 1 or November 1 when they cut everybody off, the 229,000 refugees. And it's the World Food Organization of the United Nations. Again, they were notified a year ago they were going to lose their food vouchers. Now, it doesn't amount to a hell of a lot of money. It's $14 a month. This is per person, of course, in a household. I can't imagine things being as expensive over there in Jordan as they are here. And maybe you can make it. You don't live good, but you can buy some food on $14. It might be equivalent to $100 a month here. I don't know. But in losing it, these people are in deep trouble. I say this is the tip of the iceberg, and it's the tip of the iceberg in this regard, because this is going to happen all over Europe with these refugees. What are they going to do when they don't get enough food? What are they going to do when there aren't enough toilets? What are they going to do when they don't have a roof over their heads? What are they going to do when they're living with sheets that are supposed to be tents, and they're in barbed wire fence? Okay, or wrought iron fence, some kind of fence is surrounding them. What are they going to do? Well, let me tell you something. They're going to revolt. You're going to have protests and demonstrations. You can't take hundreds of thousands of people and leave them in one area and just do nothing. You know, it's not a concentration camp by any means, but it's a form of they're concentrated in that area. And these people are not going to live like this. They might take it for a year or two, but we're going to have trouble. Every country's going to have trouble, all right? Let me stay with Jordan for a minute. In 2011, Jordan only had 2,000 Syrians that they were taking care of, okay? Today, Jordan is the home of 630,000 Syrian refugees, of which only 229,000 were on these food vouchers. 630,000 more foreigners are in that country, Syrians in Jordan. This is going to happen all over Europe. It's already happening in France and Germany and Italy. These countries, the people of these countries won't put up with it. Look what happens with the Mexicans who came over. We've got our southern states yelling and screaming. They don't pay taxes. We have to give them hospitalization. We put them on welfare. We've got to send their kids to our schools. They're not paying for them. It's going to start on a larger scale. And this time, though, because there's a number of them, there's going to be trouble. And I don't know who's going to win. I think that this problem with immigration in Europe is going to change the complexion and the face of everything in Europe, from boundary lines to how people live to who the ruling people are. We shall see. Now, let me stay with this immigration problem, because it is a worldwide problem. It's in the United States, and it's in Europe. We have our Mexicans coming over. But, you know, we never really take a look at this thing, and I wish sometimes the media would tell us. It isn't just Mexicans, and it isn't primarily Mexicans that are coming over. It's people from Central and South American countries where there are big drug cartels. They're leaving and coming up through Mexico to get into the United States, and there's more of them than there are Mexicans, and they're leaving because the drug cartels are having wars down there over who's going to control the poppies and everything else, and they're getting shot, so they want to get out. Now, we also have people going into Europe. Right now, we're worrying about the people coming through Turkey, from Syria, Iraq, et cetera, Afghanistan, into Europe. For the last several years, people have been coming from North African countries, okay, into Europe. We don't hear about them. My friends in Italy, as you know, I travel to Italy and Greece frequently. My friends in Italy, they all tell me, when they go out now, and you've got people who are working or people retired with money. These are the Italians, for example. And yet, sitting in the park benches, and they don't have money, are black people. Okay, these are Afros. They're Africans. And they made their way to Italy. They're really trying to get to Denmark and Sweden. Sweden's the best place to go, I guess. But they're sort of stuck, and there's more and more of them. And they tell me the country's turning black. I know that sounds terrible, but it's true. And these people don't want to stay there. But how do you get them out? And now Italy's going to be taking in more people that are going to come from the Middle East. I don't know how you solve the problem, but I only see the problem getting bigger, not smaller. And this problem's going to be the true test of the Euro Union. You know, Chancellor Merkel of Germany, she wants to be numero uno and everything, and she's trying to hold this thing together. She says, we got to take them in. We got to work out a schedule, an allotment. Everybody's going to take so many. And let me tell you one thing about Germany. They've been saying on television, these people don't do their homework, I'm telling you. They've been saying on television, Germany's agreed to take in 800,000 people. Germany hasn't agreed to take in 800,000 people. It's been said that by the end of the year, or within a year rather, 800,000 people are going to come into Germany, immigrants. But Germany hasn't said we'll take them. See how things get turned or twisted and not explained. In any event, all these countries are going to have to take in a lot of people. Now, England doesn't want them. They're going to take in 20,000, it was announced today. They're willing to take 20,000 in between now and 2020. France is willing to take in, I don't know, 24,000 right away. Germany hasn't said the exact number. They're just taking them in. Italy's taking them in, too. What's going to happen? These people have to be fed. They have to be clothed. They have to be taken care of. It's going to blow economies. It's going to blow national budgets. It's bad. The culprits today are Syria, no question. That's the biggest culprit. Afghanistan and Iraq and North Africa. All of these places have Muslim wars. This is why we're having this trouble. The Islamic world is on the march. They're having wars in each of these places to decide which religious sect within the Islamic world is going to run the country. In the meantime, the people from the other sects are getting the shit knocked out of them. They're getting killed. Families are getting killed. They must get out. So I don't know what's going to happen, but it's horrible. I want to talk about Yemen for a moment. Well, before I get to Yemen, let me say this to you. There are certain countries in the Middle East that are rich. We all know this. Look at Saudi Arabia. They gave us $4. They're our friends, remember. They gave us $4 a gallon gasoline. Also, 15 of the 19 people who were involved in 9/11 were Saudi Arabians, okay? But they're our friends. And all of these countries I'm going to mention now are rich. They got money like you wouldn't believe. I'm talking about Saudi Arabia, Qatar, United Arab Emirates, Kuwait, Oman, and Bahrain. All right? Well, they got money. You know what they say about helping all these people out and taking them in? They have announced they will take nobody in. This is their people. These are Muslims. This is the Middle East, and the very wealthy Muslim countries are saying, we're taking zip and zero, not our business, don't bother us. Now, oh my God. You know what I'd like to see now? I wish someone would ask Donald Trump how he plans on handling this situation, or how he would handle it if he was over there in Europe. I'd be very interested in hearing his response. In fact, I'd be very interested in hearing the response of all the candidates. Okay? He talks about we're going to throw whole Mexican families out, including those that were born here and our citizens, but we'll let them back in. What a crock. Nobody's going to be let back in, and nobody's going to get thrown out. It's going to cost billions of dollars to get 11 million people who are here improperly, illegally, assembled and sent them out of the country. We're going to blow the tax base. We're going to blow everything in this country. This guy does not know what he's doing, and he is dangerous, but I'd like to know what his plan is for helping immigrants. Yemen. I want to get to Yemen. Yemen's a little country over there in the Middle East. Violence is escalating in Yemen. It's at the point of almost total chaos, okay? Now, guess who? You got to understand, we're over there fighting in Saudi Arabia. We're over there fighting, rather, in Syria, Afghanistan, Iraq. And guess who's gone to war? They've been at war for several months, but they really picked things up in August. Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates invaded Yemen 2 weeks ago. Okay, they invaded Yemen 2 weeks ago. I'm talking about foot soldiers big time. It was announced yesterday that Qatar is sending in 1,000 troops, a small number, to help them. The problem is, you know, they don't know who to help. You got several Muslim sects in Yemen, and the wrong people may win. And if the wrong people win, here's the reason why Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, and Qatar are fighting this battle. Because if the wrong religious sect wins, and it looks like the wrong religious sect is going to win from their perspective, a permanent Iranian colony, because this particular sect is supported big time by Iran, a permanent Iranian colony would now exist on Saudi Arabia's southern border. So they've gone out to fight their own war to save their own ass. Wow. In the short time I have left, I want to talk about political correctness. I think it's gone to an extreme in this country. It's gone much too far. Political correctness. Everybody's on their tiptoes. It's like walking on eggs. Let's be realistic. The Confederate flag, taking it down, was right. I didn't see anything wrong with that. There's no question it personified, it represented a war to preserve slavery. Fine, take it down. What's the next step, though? What next do we take down? Well, we go to the University of Texas, and the president of the university announced this week there's a statue of Jefferson Davis on campus. Jefferson Davis, as you know, is the president of the Confederacy. He wants the statue removed. And I say, how far do you go? A lot of these people went to war because They were from Georgia and Alabama and Texas and so forth, and these were strong states people in those days, and they went because their state went to war. These were primarily poor people who went to war on both sides because it was the right thing to do. They had to fight for their country or their state. This guy, he was an excellent general. He is number one in the military. But he did what he thought was right. It was his country. New country, but his country. I don't know. I don't know if that's going too far. But what bothers me, in order to maintain symmetry, nice way of putting it, the president said, we also are going to remove a statue of President Woodrow Wilson. Now, what the hell did Woodrow Wilson do? President during World War One, League of Nations, all that sort of stuff. Well, the president said, Woodrow Wilson was well known for praising the Ku Klux Klan during his time in office. That's going too far, in my opinion. That, my friends, is the show for this week. Hope you enjoyed. Come back again next week if you did. Tell your friends to listen in. The show is archived, as you know, on Blog Talk Radio and YouTube, and it's linked. Tomorrow morning it will be linked to my Key West Lou website. You can find everything on Key West Lou, my newspaper column, my blogs, and everything else. The book's still out there for sale, The World Upside Down. It's selling again a little bit. If you haven't read it, buy it and read it. It's a very cheap buy. You will enjoy the book. Again, thank you for joining me. I look forward to being with you next week.